Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte, episode 152 from May 25th, 2010, made by hand. Net at Night is brought to you by Go to Assist Express. If you're in tech support, clients rely on you for fast and reliable service. Help them the fast and easy way with Go to Assist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit gotoassist.com/night. And by squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/night. It's time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California. I am Leo Laporte.
And from Mississauga, Ontario, Canada, I'm Amber MacArthur.
That's easy for you to say, Amber MacArthur. What are you doing in Mississauga?
Well, you know Alan Cross, who came on our very special music episode. He invited me to be a guest on his show. He does a TV show as well as a radio show. And I was on chatting about social media and music and how musicians are using the web to promote their stuff. And they've kind of left MySpace a little bit and gone to other sites. So we had a really great chat, and Alan's a great guy.
Oh, I love Alan. That's interesting. So they're not using, because MySpace, really, that's how it started. It was really for independent musicians. Then it became a social site like Facebook, and then once Facebook took over, it kind of has been in decline. But I thought that independent musicians still used it heavily. Not so, huh?
I think they're still going there just to have some type of online presence, but they're using other sites like Facebook and Twitter to promote as well. So it's not as though MySpace is the only game in town. There's a bunch of different websites.
Right.
So we had a great little chat about that. And Alan is a huge fan of yours, Leo, and he's a geeky guy, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, it's funny. We met at one of our Call for Help meetups many moons ago, and I think the world of him. He's really well known in Canada, less so here in the States, but now I've become a fan. And he does a number of shows about rock and roll history and really cool
stuff.
Yeah,
does some amazing stuff. He's definitely a legend in Canada.
Well, let us get to another legend in just a little bit. We've got a great guest here today.
I know. We have Mark Freuenfelder, who is the co-founder of Boing Boing, and he's been on the show before, but he's coming on tonight to talk about his new book. So can't wait to chat with him. I got his book as well. We actually have the same publisher, so snagged a copy early, and I know you have a copy there, and I just love anything this guy does.
Mark is the editor-in-chief of Make Magazine, so he's kind of part of the maker movement, and the book is called Made by Hand, Searching for Meaning in a Throwaway World. Wow, that's some serious stuff.
It is some serious stuff, and it's a great read, and maybe not what you expect.
He's holding a guitar made out of a cigar box on the front. Well, I love Mark, one of the nicest guys in the business. The guy who started we had Cory Doctorow on TWiT on Sunday. We've had Jenny on as well. So I'm a big fan of Boing Boing. I mean, they're really kind of the original internet blog.
They really are.
Yeah, and Mark does such great stuff. So I can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun. But before we do that, we usually have a few links to talk about.
Yeah, we sure do. Well, I was off last week because I was sick, unfortunately. And there's still lots of stuff.
You're
about
feeling better?
Facebook and privacy. Yes, I'm feeling much better. I get, you know, I get some type of bug about once a year, and then the rest of the year I'm very healthy. So this was my time. And I caught it from my son, unfortunately. And he's better and I'm better. And Chris also caught it 2 days after me. So the whole house, I just told people, stay away from our house. Don't come near us. Yeah. But everybody's doing much better.
Good.
Yeah, so on the positive side.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you read this headline. You probably did, Leo, about how Mark Zuckerberg has announced that they are going to improve privacy on Facebook. And there's a big
I've read that headline like five times. I've read that headline in the last 5 years, haven't I?
Yeah, probably over and over again. Yeah. So not sure what they're going to do. Hopefully they've been feeling a lot of pressure from people who are demanding better privacy controls and that there are things that people can opt into instead of by default being set to being public. So I don't know. Just I'll be looking forward to this news.
He had a commentary in the New York Times yesterday. It's my, you know, I'll watch with great interest to what they do. It seems to me it's very simple. If they really are committed to keeping the promise that they made from day one, you know, the promise of Facebook originally was you put your stuff here. It's private unless you say otherwise, unless you tell your, you know, us, your, this is your friend, and then he can see it. And that's the promise, right? You join Facebook because it's private. You don't join Facebook because it's public. But they've been changing their business model. I think everybody seems to think that because they want to do an IPO next year, and they realize there's a hell of a lot more money if all of that information that you and I and everybody else has been putting on Facebook for the last few years is public. Then there's all sorts of stuff they can do with it. But so they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. Yeah, we made this promise, but we'd really like to make the money. And so what they've been doing is they've been slowly changing things to make them more and more public. And they've left their users behind. I think their users are confused. I think many users, and I'll include myself, are annoyed with Facebook because they've broken their promise to us, in effect. And, you know, it's really simple. All they have to do to make me and everybody else shut up is say, just go back to their original promise. Everything you post on Facebook is private unless you explicitly say otherwise. Make it opt in. Make privacy the default. Watch, because that's not what they're going to do tomorrow. Well, they might, but we'll see. But if they did that, I would say you win. But I don't think they're going to say that.
I don't think they're going to either, and I do think that's what they should say. I mean, with 400 million users, I mean, they're risking right now having so much success in the future just by being dumb and making their privacy settings so complicated. I'm sure you've seen the site Open Book, which I don't know if you talked about it on past shows, but it allows you to see what information is public on Facebook, and I think it will shock people when they're searching things like status updates on Open Book, and you can find out if you put in a search term, let's say if you put in a term like skipping school or something like that, you can find all of the status updates where people are talking about skipping school. And I think that people just, they don't understand what's going on with Facebook privacy right now, unfortunately. And they need a lot of education, and Facebook needs to step up.
It's youropenbook.com. If you want to, you know, do one of these searches just to see what you get when you search Open Book. I talked to my kid. The reason I left, and by the way, I've completely deleted. If you find a Leo Laporte on Facebook, it ain't me. It's somebody else. Because I, and this is another problem I have with Facebook. You just really don't have any control over that. So I talked to my kids, and I said, you understand that everything you post on Facebook could be at some point private, whether through an error on Facebook or through intent on Facebook's part, it could go public. So you should never post anything on Facebook that you wouldn't want friends, family, teachers, or future employers to see. And they said, no, that's not, you got it wrong, Dad. And I said, no, I got it right. And my fear is, and this is why I left Facebook, I don't want anybody, because of me, because they think, oh, well, Leo's on Facebook. This is a good way to communicate with him, or this, let's see what he's doing. We don't put anything on Facebook, folks. We put it on the public web. We have a blog. We have lots of ways. You know, we put out 30 or 40 hours of programming a week. There's plenty of ways to find out what we're up to, and it ain't going to be on Facebook. And I don't care if they change your policy or not. I'm not going back. You know what? I don't miss it. Do you think you'd miss Facebook if you left it?
I think so. You know, I have a lot of close friends and family who are using Facebook, and quite frankly, that's how I keep in touch with people who I don't get a chance to see and talk to on a regular basis. So, I think the difference is I never put anything on Facebook in the first place that I worried about being public, but that's because of my, you know, what I do. You know, so much of what I do is out there in the public space. But I will say, you know, I'm just shocked all the time, and it's not just on Facebook, but on other sites as well, how comfortable people are with putting their home address, their phone number, all this information. You know, I wouldn't put any of that on any site. I don't care how much you can lock down the privacy. You really shouldn't share that type of information. That is so personal.
You shouldn't put anything on the internet that you don't want to be public.
No,
it's just too hard to control. But I'm mad at Facebook because they've made it very difficult for people to figure out they've shifted it. Even Mark Zuckerberg, as we talked about when it happened, had his own personal pictures and wall posts go public briefly when they changed the last time. And then he said, oh, that's okay. Everybody, I live in public. And then he took them back. Of course, he made them private again. I guess he doesn't really live on public. I'm kind of over it, and I don't miss it. I think that I understand it's very useful for people. You know, my daughter is a freshman in college next fall, and she's already meeting her future college mates on Facebook. They've got a group, and I think every college probably does this now. We didn't have it when I was a kid, but I think that's a really neat thing. But does it have to happen on Facebook? Couldn't it happen through a web page? Wouldn't it be better if it happened through a web page?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's going to be difficult for people to change their habits. So many people are comfortable on Facebook, so many different age ranges from teenagers all the way through to grandparents. And so all I can say, Leo, is that I hope they do something drastic tomorrow. I hope they announce something that really includes some significant changes. And like you said, go back to the way that things used to be on Facebook. And I think they'll make a lot of people happy, but I'm not 100% confident
that will
happen.
You know, they're torn, right, between the chance to make a huge amount. They're close to 500 million users now.
I know. It's amazing.
It's just unbelievable. And that's the other thing. I mean, maybe it's just I'm bitter about their success. But I just, you don't want somebody to be that dominant. You really don't.
Yeah, they're huge.
They're huge. I mean, of course, Google's that dominant. They don't bother me as much for some reason. I don't know.
But I think with Google, it's more clear. I actually was just talking to Alan about this. And, you know, the one thing Google does, for example, in Gmail is every time if I have a conversation in Gmail about having a cold, then all of a sudden I get advertisements at the top for cold medication.
It doesn't bother me, though, because they're not reading my mail. It's just an engine. You know, it's a keyword.
Exactly. It's an engine. And also we know that there's nothing leaking out necessarily to the public web from your inbox. And so I think the difference is with Facebook, they've just made it so complicated, so unclear about what's public, what's private, and I don't think Google does that. I think it's very clear with Google, whether you like it or not. I just think they make it very straightforward.
You know, Colleen just left Twitter.
I know.
And she's at Google now. She got a job as an engineer, video streaming engineer at Google. And she was telling me that the stuff that you have to sign is very clear when they hire you. You will not in any way invade the privacy of our customers, do anything that could make that privacy, you know, they're really explicit in all of their employment agreements with their employees. This is like the holy, tablets you got here. These thou shalt not. And I think that's, I'm impressed because of what I know about Google. It doesn't mean they couldn't change someday. That's what's happened at Facebook. You know, Facebook has changed, you know, although some would say that it's always been that way.
Yeah, no, I think they've changed. I think they have made it more complicated. But that's good to know about Google. You know,
it makes
me feel a lot better.
We'll see. I'm not saying they shouldn't have oversight. We got to, and we'll keep our eye on them. Of course, they know a lot about us. So we had Merlin Mann on during Mac Break Weekly a little bit ago, and he was talking about his home theater PC, his Mac Mini, and access to data. And I almost said, hey, the producers from Hurt Locker have been trying to get a hold of you. They're suing people, aren't they? Like thousands of them.
I know. This is the craziest story. For people who don't know what it's about, the movie Hurt Locker, they are very upset about people who are downloading their films. So, sorry, it's Voltage Pictures is the name of the production company. And so they are planning to sue BitTorrent users who download any of their movies. And they're very aggressive about it. And there was a neat story that I just read on Boing Boing where there was a guy from, I think he's from Toronto, who wrote an email into Voltage Pictures and said he was very upset about this news and thought it was a little bit harsh. And he got an email back from the president of Voltage Films. And the email is just unbelievable. He says many things in the email, including, I hope your family and your kids will end up in jail for stealing.
What?
So they can be taught the difference. Yes, he just went off. He went totally crazy. So this is a personal email written directly from Nicholas Charchier.
I'm glad you're a moron who believes stealing is right. I hope your family and your kids end up in jail one day for stealing so maybe they can be taught the difference. Until then, keep being stupid. You're doing that very well, and please do not download, rent, or pay for my movies. I actually like smart and, more important, honest people to watch my films. oh my God.
I know. And if you look at the original email from the person who was a fan of Hurt Locker, it was a very polite email. He says, I have recently become aware of Voltage Pictures' intention to sue thousands of people who are suspected of having used BitTorrent to download films. I wish to register my disagreement with these tactics. You know, it's so kind, so Canadian. And it's such a harsh response. And it's generating a lot of comments on Boing Boing as well. I think there's almost 300 right now.
Apparently this guy was banned from the Oscars because he sent some nasty emails out before.
It's a firecracker.
He just, you know, some people just don't know when not to push the send button. What do you think, though? I mean, I understand if you're a producer of a film and your film, you feel, which was expensive to make and is not, I don't think it's yet broken even, or if it has, it just barely has, even though it won Best Picture of the Year at the Academy Awards. And you feel like one of the reasons we're not making money is because people are stealing it.
I don't know, Leo. I feel as though for most of these films, I mean, they do make a fair amount of money, and I don't think they're starving right now. And I think a lot of these production companies can be a little bit greedy, and they want all of the money. They don't want that little fringe from people downloading the films. I mean, to be honest with you, if I look at all of my friends and family, most of them pay for movies. They pay to rent movies. They pay to go to movies. They're not downloading movies illegally. They just don't have the time, or they don't have the technical knowledge to know how to do it. So I can't see it having as big of an impact as they say.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I could see why he'd be upset, but at the same time, you got to understand that that's, well, it's not going to reflect well on you. Let's put it that way.
And also, I hope your children go to jail.
Wow. This is an angry man.
It's so harsh, you know?
Angry, angry man.
Yeah, he's an angry man. And unfortunately, he's not getting a lot of sympathy online.
So you know who's not leaving Facebook? Zynga.
Zynga.
There was word, you know, Mark Pincus at Zynga. They make hundreds of millions of dollars with Farmville, Yeoville, Mafia Wars. They have poker games. The most popular games on Facebook. And for a while, there was rumors flying around. I don't know if they were true or not, that they were going to do their own server and leave Facebook. Well, obviously, Facebook sat down at the table with Zynga, and they've made a long-term deal. So Zynga's happy to be part of Facebook. I don't know. I think Farmville's kind of creepy. Have you ever played Farmville?
You know what? I played a little bit just for research purposes, of course, Leo. And I didn't get hooked, but I know people who are so hooked on Farmville. I mean, they're playing any chance they get at work. It's a total addiction for them.
And it's I'll be honest, it's not that much fun, but you have this social component that, you know, your family or friends give you a pig. So you got to give them a pig or whatever. You know, there's this thing that you can't, it's hard to quit because, it is, I guess it's compulsive. It's fun in that sense. I check my farm on my iPad a lot, but it's not Farmville.
Yeah, so that's, you know, different. I don't know. I've seen enough people who are totally hooked on Farmville and who can't stop playing.
What is it about it? I don't understand why it's so appealing. I had to delete it from my Facebook because it was, you know.
Draining time.
Draining. Yeah, I was like, I was thinking, what am I doing?
I know. And so this story really surprised me. So 7-Eleven is selling Farmville Slurpees. So these are Farmville branded products that you can unlock virtually in the Facebook game.
Well, wait a minute. So, they're not real Slurpees?
Well, they're real Slurpees, I think. And then I don't know. I don't really understand how this works. There's going to be 30 branded items I guess you can unlock in Farmville.
This is actually smart because, you know, when I play these games, I don't want to give them any money. So I just am very patient. You really, it's hard to do anything successful in Farmville without buying, you know, gold. So I guess if you go and you get a Slurpee and then you'll get some gold or something in Farmville.
Yeah. And I guess if you're a real addict, then you can... I don't know, get a bunch of these promoted products.
It's great. It's brilliant. Mark Pincus is brilliant. This guy is incredible.
Oh, they're such a successful company. We should have them on the show, Leo. I think at one point Dane was trying to chase them.
I'd love to get Mark on the show. He's a friend of Jason Calacanis's, so maybe we can pull some strings and get him on. I'd love to get him on.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Brilliant, brilliant guy.
Yeah, it's always interesting, too. I think when you see these stories that kind of exist in this social space online using games like this, and then they trickle over into the real world, into physical products, I think that always is a sign that you have really made it and you've produced something successful.
Were they at, I think that they were at TechCrunch Disrupt talking about, Have you been watching the videos there?
Did you see the video of Michael Arrington? I'm sure you did, and the CEO of Yahoo.
Did she flip him off? What happened? I just heard about it. I didn't see it.
Oh, Leo, you have to watch this. You have to watch it. I can't believe it. So basically, they're getting in an argument, and I guess Michael Arrington is telling the CEO of Yahoo that she should stick to what Yahoo knows best, which is search. And she basically looks at him and says, you know, Michael, you are responsible for a very small company, a very small company. So basically, don't tell me how to do things.
I love her. You know, one thing about Carol Bartz. And I was a little, you know, they're paying her a lot of money. It's a tough job she's taken over to turn Yahoo into success. But you got to admire her forthrightness and the things she says. And she is she's abroad. She does not mind just coming out swinging. And she's right. Yeah. this is kind of like Steve Jobs saying in that email exchange, what have you made? What have you done? What have you accomplished?
And she just basically puts him in his place and his whole face just drops. And then she tells him to F off. Yes. And she doesn't say F off. She says,
oh my God, I've got to see this video.
Kahuna.
Do you mind if we play this video? Will it hurt your shell like ears?
No. Just make sure you beep it when you put out the. should watch it. It's worth watching.
I've got to find it. I can't believe she tells Mike Arrington. You know, who else has ever told Mike Arrington to F off?
Well, only one very respected man I have to know.
Man.
Okay, we need a keyboard cat like Matt.
Man, I love it. Poor Mike. Mike is just, that's Mike for you. And it's Carol.
He gets under people's skin.
It's Carol. I mean, I'm trying to find, is there a video of this somewhere?
Oh, yeah, there's video of it.
Probably on TechCrunch.
I think there is on TechCrunch.
I'm sure Mike thinks this is the best thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely...
Did she take off her mic and storm out, or did she stay there?
No, she's there, but the little clip that I watched, I'm trying to see here.
They have a transcript on TechCrunch.
Oh, you got to find the video. It's pretty good.
Is this it? I'm just going to play a little bit. This is kind of TC50.
The social juice, but there's always an issue of giving up
control. This is something else going on. I don't know what this is.
And the way that traditional media companies are used to... Oh, mind your way. Sorry.
Boy, that's good video. Video starts a few minutes and skip ahead, it says. Oh, okay. But where's Carol Bartz?
I see it right now. Actually, Leo, I see just the Carol Bartz part.
And where is
on
that?
On a different site.
How much video...
All right. So what site are you looking at it?
It's called, it's pamil-visions.net. P-A-M-I-L.
You're a better searcher than I am.
/visions/visions.net.
I couldn't Google it.
Or dash, yeah.
Pamil-visions.net. Everything PR, the public relations news portal.
Did
Yahoo
you see it on
boss
there?
And a touch of no class. Oh, Phil Butler. All right. Let me see if I can find it. Here's the video.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube, of course. Carol Bartz, Mike Arrington, cover your ears.
You are involved in a very tiny company.
Very tiny.
And it probably takes a long time to even convince yourself what the hell to do.
Oh, Carol. Scoble's there laughing his ass off. That's Scoble's laughter.
Something magical that the fine people of Yahoo are supposed to do in this short time. So off.
You know what? I kind of want to say right on, Carol. That's great.
It's very easy.
It's very easy for us in the press to criticize a company and admit, and I think everybody admits there's huge challenges at Yahoo. But you got to admit, this woman's got guts. She's tough. I got good people working for me. They just went out and bought, what did they spend? A lot of money on Associated Content. I think $800 million on this demand media company. They're trying to be a big content player, and she's right. You can't turn a ship like Yahoo on a dime. Wow.
Oh, exactly. I know. So that's a good video to watch again and again just for a good
time. Wow. And Mike's sitting there a little chagrined, but I think he's loving it.
Yeah. People like him need to be put in their place now and again, right?
I would never tell Mike Arrington to screw off, but hey, let's take a break. When we come back, a very nice guy. We would never say anything nasty to Mark Frohnfelder. He's the author of Made by Hand, a brand new book that's just come. Actually, it's coming out May 27th. So we got him 2 days before it's out in the stores. This is an advanced copy. He is just such a great guy. Editor in chief of Make Magazine, talking about getting back to basics and searching for meaning in a throwaway world. I just love that idea. Before we do that, though, God, let me mention one of our sponsors, a great group of people, the folks, as you know, we talk about them a lot at Citrix. They do GoToMeeting, GoToMyPC. They know remote access, and they've created a fantastic tool for support for anybody who has to support people, whether you're a software support fellow or gal, or maybe you're in IT, or maybe you just have to support friends and family. GoToAssist Express is the way to help a client. You might be on the phone with them, walking them through stuff, but it's so much easier if you just can get it done. You'll be a support hero. It takes so much less time to just fix the problem. They love it. You could, of course, take a trip to their office or down the hall, but why not just do it with GoToAssist? All you have to do is send them a link. You've already got GoToAssist Express installed on your system. You send them a link. They click the link. Now you're in Windows or Mac. You can copy a fix over or an update just from drag and drop from your computer to theirs. You could do up to 8 sessions at the same time, even unattended sessions. And now you can try it free for 30 days. Go to gotoassist.com/night. gotoassist.com/night to try this absolutely free for 30 days. If you're a part-time or a family IT person, they have day passes. But if you're in the business, you're going to want the full subscription. It's just fantastic.
And Leo, I think it's a great Father's Day present.
Oh, not GoToAssist, but fixing Dad's computer.
Yes. No, fixing Dad's computer and using tools like GoToAssist for sure.
I agree. I use this with my mom. You know, it's funny. I'm Jennifer's dad. I gave him an iPad. I can't use GoToAssist on it, so I actually am driving to Santa Cruz on Thursday night to set him up. But it would be so nice. So nice if I GoToAssist. GoToAssist Express, absolutely. Free customer service 24/7, end-to-end 128-bit encryption. You can see what programs are running, what operating system, what security software, everything you need to diagnose and fix your users' problems. GoToAssist.com/night. Give it a try. Absolutely free today. All right, let's get Mark on the line because I want to talk to him. I'm so excited. Is it now? Is it? I heard you say like Frohnfelder.
Frohnfelder.
Is that how you say it?
I don't know. I always say it like that. It's a great name.
If we just get him on, he could probably tell us how you pronounce his name.
He can set us straight.
You'd think I'd know. I didn't bother to find out. Hey, Mark.
Hi, how's it going?
It's great. Frohnfelder, how do you say it?
It's Frohnfelder. Hi, Amber.
Hi.
He is not a frowny fella. Are you out in the backyard?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can see my backyard out the window over there.
Okay.
That's close enough.
Are you excited? Are you going to go on a book tour for Made by Hand?
Well, I'm going to do a few things. I'm going to go to New York in June, and I'm going to be on the Colbert Report, which ought to be fun.
Awesome. Oh, my gosh. You are my new hero.
That's Keith Kevin, isn't it?
I think it'll be fun. And I think I was on it a couple of years ago, and I brought some various props, like a marshmallow gun shooter and some other toys, a little robot. So I'm going to bring some more props this time. And I think it'll be a lot of fun.
How exciting. Now, you just had Maker Faire this past weekend, right? In San Mateo.
Yeah, that was right. It was in San Mateo. It was really fun. I think our estimates are that about 80,000 people attended.
Wow.
It's huge. Yeah. And it was just, I mean, the interesting thing is the way that it's getting more, it's getting richer every year. This is the fifth year we've done it. And the makers are starting to see what other makers are doing and then incorporating what they learn from each other. So that a lot of the crafters who make things out of fabric are incorporating Arduino and other kinds of projects involving electronic circuits into their work. And it's just this great kind of cross-pollination breeding ground of wonderful creativity.
I think making...
Do you think more and more people are making things by hand? And if so, why?
Yeah, I think they are because, I have this theory that when the World Wide Web started, like around 1993, all the creative people glommed onto it because it was like, you know, virgin territory to be developed. And so they turned the World Wide Web from nothing, from this vast wasteland, into this incredibly rich ecosystem. And now that it's pretty mature now, the web, there's still things happening, but I mean, it's been built up and colonized. All these creative people kind of looked up from their computers and said, wow, like the whole world is a hackable platform. And so now they're like, you know, changing the physical world around. And the internet is actually boosting that process because the internet is the place to go to connect with other people who share your interests.
Amazing. Now, for people who haven't had a chance to read the book, Leo and I have an advanced copy, so we're the lucky ones. I think initially when I knew that you had a book coming out, I was thinking it was going to be a how-to book, and it would tell you how to make things. But it's really not that at all.
Yeah. Well, interesting, you know, I wasn't really a maker when I started working on Make Magazine. I was involved in DIY media, you know, doing my own zines and playing in bands and making records and things like that. But I had not really been a DIYer. And so I was so inspired by the people from that I worked with who are contributors to Make Magazine that I decided to give it a try myself. And so the book is about my adventures as a DIYer and kind of what I learned and the things that are important to me and the mistakes I made. And I really wanted to do projects that had as big an impact as possible on my life. So I really focused a lot on food, like, you know, raising chickens and keeping bees and working with like old school food preservation techniques and whittling my own kitchen implements out of wood and making cigar box guitars and things that like had as much of an impact on my life as possible. And so that was kind of the book is there's a lot of urban homesteading and things like that in it.
I love the story you tell about the God shot, going to visit the king of espresso baristas and how to make the perfect shot of espresso.
That was really fun. And that's a lifelong learning is, you know, espresso is such an interesting thing and something that, you know, I have an espresso machine and I make, you know, two to three double shots of espresso a day. And so I thought that would be a good area to explore since that's such a huge part of my daily life. And so I took lessons from the world barista champion. His name's Kyle Glanville, and he's like the best espresso maker on the planet. And I stood in front of him and used my espresso machine and showed him how I pulled a shot of espresso. And it turned out that every single thing I did was wrong. And so, you know, he's super nice and like, you know, very helpful. And one of the things he told me was that water temperature is one of the very most important things about making good espresso. Locking in that water temperature.
And it's not boiling, is it?
Right. It's like 198 degrees is like the perfect temperature. most espresso machines, the thermostat is pretty crappy. And you can get a temperature swing of like 40 degrees from shot to shot. And so I ended up buying this kit that I attached to my espresso machine that uses something called proportional integral derivative temperature control. And I, you know, got into the guts of my espresso machine and wired it all up. And now it locks in so that the variation is really like, typically it's like 2/10 of a degree variation. So I have that variable nailed down now. So my espresso is consistently pretty good.
That's really. I think that's how I define geek, is that somebody who is obsessive about something. It doesn't really matter what it is, but who cares so much about just doing it right that he or she puts all of this energy into it. And that's that I love those people.
Yeah, they're enthusiasts.
Enthusiasts.
Yeah, and so you know, Make Magazine is about enthusiasts, people who have a passion for something. And the interesting thing about what I find about the people who write for Make and are involved is that they're kind of broad spectrum enthusiasts, and they're interested in a lot of things. And that kind of curious personality, people who really want to learn as much as they can about all the things that they live with in their life and things that affect them. I have a tremendous amount of respect for those kinds of people. And they also are just really interesting people to hang out with because they're so much fun, you know, seeing the way they look at the world.
Well, we live in an incurious world. I mean, it's, everything's so complex around us that we kind of walk around in this bubble of blissful ignorance about how our cars work, our computers work, even the lights in our house, where the power comes from. And if you start to pay attention to what's going on, it's fascinating. And there's a and you realize that this ignorance is probably not a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, just getting involved in DIY just in a little bit makes you much more observant of the world around you. Like when I started working on building chicken coops, I've built two of them now. It makes you like really start studying carpentry, the way the wood is fastened and joined. And I look at, like, every time I go by like a gazebo or a shed or a shack, I'm really interested in it. It's something that was invisible to me before. And that new kind of awareness of the world around you is, you know, I think it's a good way to go around. You're more appreciative of things that, that, you know, the world you live in, instead of, like you said, just being oblivious to it and living in this kind of a bubble where you just, you know, buy everything that you need. Every single solution can be purchased. Instead, if you try to solve things yourself, you might end up, you know, living a life that's more fun.
You know, it's kind of apropos. Martin Gardner passed away last week. For years, his Scientific American column on mathematical divergence was just such a great, exciting column. And that's what Martin had. He had that fascination with how things are, how they work. You call it learning how to learn. And you think the schools would teach you how to learn.
Yeah.
They don't.
You know, one of the people that I interviewed in the book, Peter Gray, studies the way kids learn. And he said, you know, the educational system here in the United States and in a lot of places around the world, kids are trained to be scholars. I mean, that's what they're preparing to do. They're learning how to sit at a desk, access information in books or computers, and write reports. And that's all they're doing. They're just constantly preparing to do something, but they're not ever really doing anything. And, you know, the idea of project-based learning where, you know, say you have kids build kites. As a result of building kites, kids have to learn geometry, like the angles. They have to use tools. When you use your hands, you start thinking in different ways. It makes you aware of the weather, all those kinds of things. And so we're the learning of those kinds of essential skills are almost a side effect of the project that the kids want to do. Building, making a kite and flying it is fun for anybody. And then as a result, you learn and you know, it's win-win that way.
I love in the book as well how you talk about how you look at things differently since you started making things. You used to look at things like an old rubber hose as a piece of trash. And then over time, you look at things in a totally different way.
Yeah. I'm, you know, when I first started out doing things, I was getting rid of stuff. Like when I was working on the chicken coop, it was like it started out as this shed, and I was like taking wood that I didn't want, like pieces of a fence that was attached to it, and just throwing it away. And I was planning on calling someone to haul it all away, but I realized that stuff was excellent material to build new projects with. And so I was like constantly recycling stuff, and you know, things like rubber hoses, you can use those materials. And so it's fun figuring out what you can do with it and keeping and storing, you know, kind of a big box of junk. It always comes in handy.
And from what I've read online so far, there's been a bunch of people who have reviewed the book. The reaction has been so overwhelmingly positive, and I imagine you're getting lots of emails yourself.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting, you know, emails from people who are really inspired by it and sharing stories about how they have become makers and getting their kids involved. And it's been a lot of fun. And since one of the things that I focus on in the book is cigar box guitars, the community of cigar box guitar makers has become interested, and they're a great group of people. There's a website called cigarboxnation.com, and it's a great place to go because people post their, you know, their photos of their builds and videos of them playing, and it's an endless supply of information, you know, innovation using, you know, cabinet hinges as a way to secure the strings, and it's just amazing seeing the variety and resourcefulness that these people demonstrate.
Out of all of the things that you wrote about in the book, what is one of the craziest projects that you've ever taken on?
Let's see. Well, I think one of them was something that I started looking into and then I abandoned, and it was generating my own energy, like with human powered electrical energy generation. And there's like there's this group of people who have come up with different ways to basically sit on a kind of a stationary bicycle, except it's like a big plywood disc that's, you know, giant, much larger than a bicycle wheel. And then you attach pedals to it. And then you sit in a seat and you pedal it. And, you know, they'll like run their toaster or their laptop while they do it. And so I thought, well, that's kind of a cool idea. Like, yeah, do-it-yourself electricity. Maybe I could do that. But you do the math and it's like, it's crazy to, you know, to power my family's energy needs for a month, I would have to ride the bike like 1,000 hours a month. And it just doesn't, even if I did like several hours a day, it would be like 1% of what we use. And it just, and so I thought, it sounds fun and I don't have any, I mean, I applaud those people who want to do that. But for me, I wanted to make this book kind of a practical thing and not like a silly, like extreme, how I did something extreme for a year, but just focus on things that made sense for my family and how much I work and things that really had a positive effect. Because if I would have done that bicycle and built it, I'm sure I would have abandoned it right away.
Right.
You'd be pretty tired, Mark.
Yeah, I would be. Yeah. I
might be, you know, that wouldn't be good.
In better shape.
But. It is a dream. It's kind of a common dream that, oh, if I could, you know, if I just could pedal for every hour that I play World of Warcraft, maybe I'd be in good shape. You have on the cover of the book, you're holding a Cigar Bucks guitar. That was one of the things, one of the projects you got into, as well as making musical instruments.
Yeah. Yeah. And lately, and I brought a sampler, the thing I've been doing lately is making amplifiers and cigar boxes.
Oh, neat.
They're perfect enclosures for that, you know, and I have, you know, here's the guts inside here.
You must smoke a lot of cigars, Mark. or else you're talking to Merlin Mann and getting his Nicaraguans when he's done.
there's just a cigar shop down the street, and the guy always gets a big smile on his face when I come down there, because then he has more room on his shelves when he sells them for like $3 each. And they're excellent enclosures, and it's really fun to try out different amplifier circuits. There's tons of people who've posted their schematics online, so it's fun to pull out the soldering iron. I haven't really done too many electronics projects before, so it's kind of a learning experience for me.
Yeah, a lot of people my age grew up with Heathkit and other similar electronics projects. They're still around, but they're bowdlerized. They're not as fun. You know, they took all the guts out of them. And chemistry sets these days, you can't do nothing with them. You can't blow up anything.
Yeah.
It's no fun.
The chemicals are harder to get, but if you know where to look, you can get a lot of the same original chemicals, because there's just weird regulations and rules. The chemicals are not, they're restricted as the chemicals, but you can go to like hardware store or something and get solvents that contain the chemicals. And so Make actually published a book about chemistry, kind of old school chemistry, that this guy is a really cool kind of amateur chemist put together. And so we show you how to get, you know, the supplies and glassware. There's all sorts of restrictions on getting glassware too, because, you know, people use them to make illegal drugs and stuff. So of course that shuts the hobbyists out as well. But there are ways to get all of that stuff too. So, you know, the book shows you how to do that.
While you were writing the book, what did you learn about yourself in the sense of, you know, all the projects you've done, all the time you spent on making things?
Yeah, well, you know, I think one thing I learned about myself was that I had a fear of failure and making mistakes that had been a result of, like, you know, in my earlier days working on home improvement projects that went awry, you know, like putting down a tile floor and the tiles would crack after 2 days, or wallpaper that was like, you know, crazy angles and the patterns wouldn't match up. And I just thought, you know, I'm not cut out for doing this. I'm not cut out for making things with my hands. And that's why I really kind of gravitated towards graphic design, because, you know, It's the undo key is a great way to fix things. There's no undo key in the real world. But after hanging out with makers and stuff, I realized they're all different in so many, you know, they're all different ages, and there are, you know, liberals, conservatives, atheists, very religious people. They're very different, but the one thing they share in common is, you know, a real enthusiasm for sharing the information, and also they don't have a fear of making mistakes. They know that making mistakes is part of it, and they've kind of gotten over that, and they think, you know, I may screw this up, but that doesn't really matter because they don't give up, and eventually they'll get something that they want. And you know, the things that they create, even if they have imperfections, and everything I made has a lot of imperfections, tons of them. But it you know, in the end, you get over that and you realize, all right, you know, I'm probably going to break things. I'm going to break tools. I'm going to lose money. It's going to cost more. And somebody who reviewed my book said that, you know, DIY is not about cheaper. It's about deeper. Getting deeper into having a deeper connection with the things that you live with every day.
You you say one other thing DIYers tend to do is have ever growing and ever evolving lists of projects they want to do, and you made a list in the book in your introduction of things you want to do. Some of which you do in the book: kill my lawn, plant a vegetable garden, start a fruit tree orchard, grow mushrooms, raise chickens, throw a house concert, make a cigar box ukulele. That's on the front. Keep bees. Make preserved and cultured foods. Hack my espresso machine. You've done a lot of these, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done quite a few.
Make a still. Make a human-powered electricity generator. Tutor my kids in math and science. Measure the diameter of the earth. Make stilts. Build a treehouse. Make a coffee table. This is great. And is this like a bucket list for you? Are these all things you want to do?
Yeah. And, you know, the list has kind of evolved, and there are more things that I want to do, but... You know, there's quite a few on there that I still need to tackle.
The book is called Made by Hand, Searching for Meaning in a Throwaway World. It's going to be out day after tomorrow. There are more maker fairs coming, by the way. In fact, we're trying to get Ford to bring us out to Detroit for the end of July for Maker Fair Detroit.
Oh, that would be great.
I hope you can come. Yeah, we're really hoping. And then there's one in the fall in New York City. Mm-hmm. So if you've not been to a maker fair, take advantage of this and go. They are incredible. And Make magazine's available on newsstands everywhere. Just go to, you know, Google Make magazine and subscribe, because it's just a fantastic magazine. Of course, Mark's blog is the proto blog, the original, boingboing.net. Still going strong.
Thank you so much, Mark. It was so great to talk to you, and I hope lots of people pick up your book. It's a great read.
Oh, thanks so much, Amber.
It's kind of a memoir, which I like about it. It's very personal, and I really love that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You might look at it and say, oh, this is going to be moralizing about, you know, how we don't make things anymore. It's not. It's just, it's kind of your story, and I love that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it, Leo.
Yeah, I really love it. One more question. So did you publish the plans for the chicken coop? Because that's my wife's giving me that assignment.
Oh, wow. I didn't publish it. You know, I started to design the chicken coop using Google SketchUp, and I realized... Just to make a box, it's easier to go to Home Depot and just like look at what's there
buy
the stuff and just
start. Do it.
You know, yeah, just do it.
And what kind of chickens?
They are a Plymouth Barred Rock chickens.
And you're happy with them?
Well, the coyotes were happier with them. It was like, you know, a half dozen Big Macs sitting in the backyard. And so anyway, either I have to make a better chicken enclosure or realize that they're... But the problem was we moved to a new place and I didn't realize how bad the predator situation was.
That's nature. That's nature,
yeah,
man. You're right.
It's a learning
experience. Seven Big Macs just waiting to be eaten.
Yeah.
Mark Fraunfelder, Made by Hand. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you again. Take care, Mark.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
I'm not kidding. Now I want to do a chicken coop.
Are you serious, Leo?
Jennifer's, you know, we live in a town where chickens kind of are in the heritage of the town, and it is in the incorporation laws of the city that anybody can have chickens within city limits up to a certain number. I can't remember, six, something like that, and that they cannot, no covenants, nobody can prevent them from having chickens. No one can prevent me from having chickens, except maybe the coyotes. I don't know if they've legislated coyotes out of business.
You could have a live chicken cam. I mean,
I just like eggs.
Endless. Yeah.
I'm in it for the eggs.
Yeah.
I wouldn't eat the chickens, but I'm in it for the eggs. Mark's book is available on Amazon.com. You can pre-order. It will come out on May 27th, just 11:69. Take it from me. It's a great, you'll read it in one night. It's just so much fun. You just can't put it down. And just for the info and making the perfect cup of coffee alone.
That's all you need.
It's worth it for that alone. Hey, coming up, Zappos pushes the wrong button. Remember the wrong button that cost the stock market 1,000 points in 1 minute?
Yeah.
This one cost Zappos $1.6 million in 6 hours. We'll talk about that. We've got the video of the week coming up and the site of the night. But before we do that, I do want to mention our good friends, you know, at Squarespace.com.
Oh,
I know you know all about Squarespace. You're a Squarespace user and lover. Chris, your partner, has a great photo site, ChrisDick.com. On Squarespace, it's the secret behind exceptional websites. Sometimes we say with Squarespace, you know, people say, oh, it's blog. It's not just blogs. It's websites of all kinds, photo sites, news sites, the social integration, the statistics, the incredible iPhone app all make Squarespace unique. It's hosting plus a very powerful yet very easy to use content management system. And the best of all, you can try it free for 14 days. No credit card, no commitment. Just go to squarespace.com/night, N-I-G-H-T, and give it a try. And by the way, if you decide you want to create a Squarespace site, they start at $8 a month, and you can get 10% off for the life of the site. Yeah, that's only 80 cents the first month, but it adds up. And if you get a, you know, you can get more expensive sites, bigger sites for bigger businesses and that kind of thing, 10% off. Squarespace.com. Use the coupon code NIGHT. Take a look when you're there at the example sites.
Clayton's site's really nice. Clayton Morris.
He did a nice job, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
ClaytonMorris.com. This is all in Squarespace. Clayton is kind of like Jim Carrey. You know, he's got that faux, you know, serious guy, except that he's a goofball.
Yeah.
I love this. Gadget, sci-fi, music, sarcasm. And to see how he's included the social media, this is all. These are all Squarespace plugins. You have full control of the CSS if you're a CSS wizard, but you don't need to. You can use drag and drop to redesign the site. It's very easy to make it look, you know, you start with great templates, but then make it look your own. Just very powerful. Squarespace.com. And you will never run out of bandwidth because these guys, you know, they've got the virtual servers that make you, they're just incredible. You know, you're very robust. Squarespace.com/night. Give it a try. You will enjoy it. I promise you. All right, I'm ready. You want to hear the Zappos story? I just threw this one in because it just crossed the wire, and I thought it was
wild.
Yeah,
I just dug it up online as well.
Yeah, it happened on Friday between midnight and 6 a.m. Zappos has a sister site, kind of a high-end site called 6 p.m. Do you ever shop at 6 p.m.?
No, I haven't.
Because I always think of you as a kind of a high-end gal.
Thank you, Leo.
Yeah. It's kind of the fancy. You know, they have Donald Pliner. That's what Jennifer wears, Donald Pliner. Oakley, you know, Birkenstock. So it's their kind of high-end site. Somebody made a mistake in the code on the website. All items in the store, maximum price $49.95. And stayed that way for about 6 hours.
Oh,
and you
no.
know what I love about Zappos? These guys, customer service is everything. They posted on their blog, we're sure it was a great deal for customers. It was inadvertent, and we took a big loss, over $1.6 million. Ouch.
Ow.
Selling so many items under cost. But you know what? We're not going to take the money back. We'll be honoring all the purchases. You're going to get your merchandise that took place on 6pm.com during our mess-up. We apologize to anyone that was confused and or frustrated during our little hiccup. And thank you all for being such great customers. We hope you continue to shop, save, smile at 6pm.com. You know what? They're going to make more than $1.6 million in goodwill. Because a lot of stores, we just say, oh, we made a mistake. Sorry, we're not going to ship you this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Zappos is a great company. We actually have Tony on.
Tony Shea's coming up. Yeah, we'll ask him about this. You'll hear him wince in person. I mean, they sell a lot of handbags. I mean, this is a high end, you know, place here. You could spend a lot of money on a leather handbag here. Look at this. Wow. $49.95 everything on the Cole Haan, the Calvin Klein, the Moschino.
Wow,
I bet a few emails went out. Quick.
Oh, I'm sure.
Run. Don't walk. Site of the night, Amber MacArthur.
Yes, our site of the night is kind of a fun one. It's a Google Maps mashup that I found on lifehacker.com, and it allows you to find the most touristy places. So it's a tourist map that's a heat map that allows you to avoid tourist traps.
So
kind of fun for summer planning.
So it's the world touristiness.
Yes,
map.
World touristiness.
Touristiness. You don't want to go here because it's so touristy. It's taking a while to load, and it's going to load up here in a second. And it's based on an analysis of photos on Panoramio, which is that great site where they have the panoramic photos.
Yeah, so it's color coordinated. So yellow tells you the highest touristy places, and red the medium touristy places, and blue the lowest touristy places. So you want to avoid the yellow spots.
So I live. Let me just see. I'm thinking I live probably in a yellow or a red.
I would say so. Yeah.
In fact, I believe I do. Let me scroll down here.
That whole area where you are,
Santa Rosa. Oh, I'm only yellow. That's not too bad, with a kind of a reddish tinge. That's fun.
It's
touristiness. Our touristy quotient
it's hard to
is
say.
High.
Yeah.
Very high here. And finally, the video of the night. There's a story behind this.
Yeah, this is kind of neat. I found this on your Twitter feed, so you might know more about it than I do. But it's a movie that was never released called Hackers Wanted, a documentary that was just recently leaked onto the internet. And Kevin Spacey is the narrator. And I watched the trailer, and it includes Leo Laporte and Kevin Rose.
Now, the story behind this, you'll be interested. You know, Dana Brunetti was on our show. We interviewed him with Ben Masrick. He's with Trigger Street. He's producing the new Facebook movie, which I can't wait to see.
Me too.
And Dana sent me a note, and he was actually upset because he put his own personal money into this documentary. And they had a fight with the director, Sam Bazzo. And I know Sam, of course, and I know Dana very well, and I'm not going to get in the middle of it. But it's been on the shelf for a long time, gathering dust. I think, there was a debate over the final cut. And I think what happened is... somebody, maybe Sam knew. Sam had sent out, without authorization, DVDs. I got a DVD of a preliminary cut of it. I actually haven't watched it because Dana didn't want that cut to get out.
Okay.
And somebody released that final cut to the BitTorrent. So and Dana said, you know, it's really a shame because we had financing. We were going to announce this week that we had financing to finish the film.
No.
So I don't want to get in between it. You know, it's kind of a he said kind of a thing. I don't know who's at fault. It was a story about Adrian Lamo, who's also a good friend. He was the homeless hacker, the guy who went around from a friend to friend's couch on a Greyhound bus and then would hack into sites like the New York Times to demonstrate their poor security. He wouldn't hack into it for his own profit. In fact, he would hack into it and then send the information to the organization. The FBI were on his case. We were afraid he was going to go to jail. He's a nice kid, you know, and I even had a free Lamo shirt made up. Fortunately, he didn't go to jail. He did get a house arrest and probation, but he's a great guy. He's a writer. He's rehabilitated. He's not hacking anymore. Very smart kid. So it was his story. And they interviewed Kevin and me on the set of the Screensavers. And this is Kevin kind of before he was Kevin Rose. This was like 2002 or 2001.
Yeah.
And Steve Wozniak and a lot of people. I'll play a little bit of this. This is Wired Magazine has this trailer. I'll leave it to your conscience whether you want to download and watch the full version. At this point, I don't know if it matters anymore because I guess the film will not get released. But here's Hackers Wanted.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 9. You know, I think as computers continue to underpin our society and become really part of what we are now seeing, I think is really a digital nervous system
where you are completely de-skilled about the problem you're trying to solve.
We all have to be cognizant of the threat of computer crime and computer criminals.
You're basically a born victim.
You know, a hacker isn't necessarily a bad thing.
All hacking is expanding the boundaries, is exploring. I could see how the Goddard Space Center talked to NASA headquarters.
I'm going to do it different. I'm going to see what else I can do. I'm going to see where else I can go.
So it's just one of those things that where you're tricking people. You're outsmarting them.
Here's Kevin.
Really, in just the course of a few hours, anybody could have gone through and turned them all off.
Society is never going to like that.
Man has been and will always be simultaneously fascinated and terrified of the unknown.
Intelligence is not defined as somebody having a brain that can think and think and consider all the possibilities and come up with the best solution.
Society will always make laws against that.
Hackers are bad. It's just one of those church realms, you know? It's like hackers are Satan.
It's very hard to make the distinction of legal and legal when you're talking hacking.
Maybe it's not all black and white. Somebody can do wrong for a good reason.
Oh, no, no. Intelligence is saying the exact same things as everyone else.
It's very hard to know what somebody's intent was.
These are people who don't want to see a world in which terrorist organizations are blowing things up.
And he would find the flaws and notify the companies that had the flaws, and I was very much admired that philosophy.
We were looking to be called patriots. We weren't looking to be recognized as something like that.
And they realized that global terror networks rely on the web and the net to coordinate their operations.
Anybody thinking about it should be scared.
We need to recruit these people. We need to use them.
They feel they need to send a message that crime can't be tolerated, no matter how well-intentioned
it is. It's a really interesting trailer. Makes me want to see the movie.
I have the DVD.
I'm going to have to dig it out. I don't know if that movie will ever see the light of the day now. And, you know, there's an update on this, which I wasn't aware of. Adrian and I have been exchanging emails and tweets for a couple of years now. In fact, we messaged each other last week. He says he wants to come on one of our shows, and we're going to have him on. But I did not know this, and this is fascinating. And it comes from Wired's Threat Level blog, which is edited by another ex-hacker, Kevin Polson, another friend of the Screensavers. We seem to attract quite a few hackers. Adrian was institutionalized for Asperger's disorder. He's been discharged as of May 7th. And he says, it's kind of a surprise that it took me until I was almost 30 years old to find out I had a particular disorder and get proper treatment for it. So I had, you know, I had not noticed that there was anything amiss with Adrian because so many of the people that I know who are hackers or geeks are somewhere on the scale of Asperger's or on the scale of autism. I've often thought, frankly, my kids think that I have Asperger's myself. And of course, it's a scale, and it's fascinating. Sometimes it's linked together with autism. It's not quite the same thing, but a fascinating story. It said the Asperger's diagnosis didn't come as a complete surprise to Lama or his family. His therapist has suggested he be evaluated for it. He says, talking to strangers was really hard for me. I had to script it all in my head and act out normal behaviors in a very conscious way. Essentially, I had to learn how human beings act. Now I no longer feel there's a surface tension that I have to break through when I talk to somebody. Like I'm a fish going after a particularly tasty bug and I have to break through the water to get it. I kind of know what he's talking about, actually. So it's very interesting. It's a fascinating story. We'll get Adrian on because I'd love to have him talk about,
about
this and the movie and more. But he's a great kid. Nice, not a kid anymore. He's 30. I've known him for a while.
He's still a kid.
He was a kid when I met him. But a great guy. And I'm sorry that this movie didn't come out. But,
I know.
I guess you can watch it on BitTorrent. And, you know, I'll have to ask Dana at this point. I guess he's washed his hands of it. It's kind of done. But at some point, we should probably talk to Sam and Dana and find out.
Yeah, we definitely should.
I do feel bad because Dana says he lost, you know, the money that he invested in it, which is too bad.
That's too bad.
Wow, what a great show. We had fun today, I think.
I know. We packed in a lot of content, Leo.
I'm off to build a chicken coop.
You are? All right. Well, I won't be, but I might eat some eggs.
I'll send you the eggs. It's the old Woody Allen joke, you know. Guy comes into a psychiatrist's office and says, my wife, she thinks she's a chicken. And the psychiatrist says, well, why don't you tell her she's not? He says, I would, but we need the eggs. Ba-da-bum. Amber MacArthur.
And what an ending.
Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time on Net at Night.